Elon Musk is a boy at heart, right? He's a 12-year-old boy stuck in a billionaire's body, right? And he finds these kind of things funny, and actually I kind of do too. He finished the presentation by saying that Tesla finally gets sexy, right? And this... Oh, God. I couldn't even bring myself to say it. It's S3XY.
I know.
And that's why the Y completes the lineup.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I did see that.
It's childish, isn't it?
It's childish, but I mean, I'm with you. I just love that. I mean, who's used the number 3 as in, like as an E since, like, the 1990s?
Yeah.
I mean, no one. And Elon's just brought sexy back. Hello and welcome to the podcast, episode 17. As always, on our monthly news digest, I'm joined by Craig Pugsley. Hey, Craig.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. How's your voice? Are you struggling a little bit?
Doing the best Barry White.
Yeah, Craig might come across as Barry White, but it is Craig,
Just so you know. How's it going? Yeah, it is me. I am here in the flesh, here in the mind, but the vocal cords have left somewhere in Bristol.
Yeah, you sound today. You know, like semi-stroppy.
More than usual.
So you just got a bit of sass about you today.
All the sass. I'm a bag full of sass.
Yeah, I love that. How are you anyway?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm really good. Super busy at this at the minute. Loads and loads of great tech. I think we've got some killer stories this time, haven't we?
Yeah, 100%. It's been an exciting month in tech.
And I think we've got really good stories about. We're going to be talking about a little bit more about foldable phones, because that story is one that just keeps giving.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit about Apple's AirPods as well, because there's always some good stuff from Apple at this time of year, and the AirPods are amazing.
My personal fave, Nike.
Yes, that's a great story, isn't it? What they're doing.
Oh my gosh, I love them. If only I could afford the Nike Adapt BBs. And also, I mean, I don't play basketball, so it might not be made for me, but I just love them.
I do wonder though how many people actually do play basketball or buy those shoes.
Yeah,
because I would totally buy a pair, and I've never been on a basketball court.
Yeah,
so you know what I mean?
I wonder if when you bought them it would make you want to take up basketball.
It would make me want to take up strutting through town showing off my new shoes. I know that for a fact.
Same.
And then we're going to talk about a little bit about Facebook and what they're doing, the new Tesla reveal, and then some other bits and pieces to round us off. So a packed show this week this time.
Indeed.
Should we crack straight on then?
Yeah, why not? So let's start with the foldable phone, shall we? Because like we were chatting just before we went live, you know, it is going to be a major trend through 2019 and probably 2020 as well. So... yeah, the Mobile World Conference, also known as MWC, in 2019 was in Barcelona. I mean, gone are the days now, really, that, you know, tech is either mobile or non-mobile. So that's a bit of a funny conference in itself, isn't it? Because, I mean, everything's mobile now. But, bendy screens is something we talked about when we did our CES 2019 episode.
Yep.
And it just keeps giving, doesn't it? But the main thing about this story is I can never pronounce their name. What's the name?
Huawei.
Huawei. What I find interesting is they're the ones that have sort of... steamed ahead with it, as opposed to like Samsung or LG. So yeah, riddle me that.
It's a really interesting market at the minute. And yeah, we've already got to peak iPhone, you know, like we're at that point now where Apple have pretty much sold as many devices as they can do to the market, and they're looking to other places for their profits, you know, and they're looking to see whether their new services can help to hit their bottom line. So the other vendors are looking at the same kind of market conditions and going, right, well, we need to innovate in other areas. And Samsung have this technology that lets you fold a screen, and the covering on it is plastic rather than glass so that you can fold it. But the real story so far has been that they've just not been very good. And the initial reviews of those devices have been that they've been real big concession pieces. So there's a device called the Royale Flex Pi. XPi that came out a couple of years ago or earlier on, that was just a bit of a mess, really. It was an example. Obviously, the very first one to come out, but it wasn't a great device. You certainly wouldn't want to buy it and carry it around with you. The Galaxy Fold is £1,500 when it comes out, which is actually quite cheap, it turns out, for these early stage devices.
Mm-hmm.
But theirs has got the screen on the outside when you fold it. But the Huawei Mate X, which they released or talked about just recently, although it is $2,500,
oosh,
Now, that's a lot of cash, right, for something you carry around in your pocket frequently, you know, above hard surfaces where you could drop it and smash it. Their screen, though, is on the inside, and I think that makes a big difference to how you would end up using it. It's a bit more practical. You also get more screen real estate and this lovely little edge where you can hold on to it. So I think a lot of people are saying that the Mate X is actually probably the direction that the rest of the vendors that come onto this, into this new trend, will follow as well.
Hmm.
It's a bit more practical. But it's really early stages on a new bit of emerging tech, and it's going to be fascinating to see where they go. And of course, Apple have got a patent in this area as well as a load of other areas. A load of other vendors that have got patents on this stuff. So, you know, there's no reason why Apple aren't experimenting and playing with this this kind of tech themselves as well at some point. So yeah, it's a really interesting trend to watch. Definitely check out the Mate X. There's some great videos that came out of MWC about that one. If you've got a grand and a half and you want to drop it on a Samsung Fold X or a Samsung Galaxy Fold, then go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I was going to say that the videos are awesome. So yeah, if anyone wants to know more, I mean, the internet's full of them. So definitely check them out. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm still pining for the Motorola Razr. I mean, nothing's going to replace that for me.
Oh, I know, right? But then recently Nokia came and did the Matrix phone, the banana phone as well. They're going on a whole retro tip, aren't they, with some of them?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big trend, the whole retro phones.
Yeah. But as phones get more expensive, as like features, top-end premium smartphones get more expensive, I'm so much more paranoid about carrying it around now, because you drop it and you've lost a grand and a half.
I know.
It's insane.
Do you know what one of my... Sorry, this is slightly off topic, straight off the bat, you know me.
Love it.
There was the mother of all spiders in my flat the other day. I mean, it was basically a tarantula. It was absolutely huge.
Yeah.
And my neighbour, it was in the entrance. Me and my neighbour were leaving at the same time, and as we came out, I screamed, obviously, and she literally just dropped her phone on it.
That was her first reaction?
Yeah.
Oh my god, a weaponized phone.
Yeah. Which one is terrible, because I don't condone killing spiders, even if they are really, really scary ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, screen down, just dropped her iPhone. And it really made me think, like, it's crazy, isn't it? Like, as soon as a new phone comes out or we get a new piece of tech, we're so precious. Like you just said, I'd be so frightened about taking it out or putting it in my pocket, it might scratch. And then you have it a couple of months and people are just throwing it on spiders.
It's insane. You take it out of an evening out, don't you, as well?
Yeah.
You know, and I'd never want to take any kind of technology when I do that.
No.
It's not a good thing. Did it kill the spider?
Sorry, listeners.
It was just squashed. That was it.
Yeah.
Spidergate.
I know.
Wow.
So yeah, anyway, moving swiftly on from spider murder. Apple's new AirPods.
Yes.
Let's chat about them. So they're rumoured to be announced on the 25th, which is next week, isn't it? God, that's come quick. And the release date is said to be next Friday, which is the 29th. So what's to be expected from them then? I mean, there's two major, like, sort of rumours going around. One is that there'll be a wireless charging case.
Yep.
But the second rumour is slightly more exciting, that there'll be a whole new sort of AirPods 2 brand type thing.
Yep.
With improved audio. There's rumours that it'll be water resistant, extended range. Also, this actually made me laugh a little bit. There's rumours that the coating will reduce slippiness.
Okay.
Just in case you find your original AirPods a little bit slippery.
The AirPods are a classic Apple product,
yeah,
right? Have you ever used them?
I've tried them, but I don't own them. But
I'm
tried them.
I'm getting my pair out of my pocket right now.
Okay.
So you know that pocket in your jeans, the one that's just above your right-hand pocket, just below your belt, right?
Yeah.
The pocket that no one quite figures out what it's for?
Never used it.
It's for them.
Really?
It's for the AirPods, right? Like, Levi knew about this 100 years ago when he was building jeans.
Love that, preemptive.
And it fits perfectly in there. So I carry them around me all the time. They're a classic Apple product, right? Because they're superb, except for their fatal flaws. Like, if you don't have Apple-shaped ears, they won't fit. They'll just keep falling out.
See, now this is what worries me, and this is why I don't own them, mainly because I lose my headphones every week without fail. So I should just buy these, because in terms of money, it would be less. Well, actually, then I just probably lose these as well. But anyway, my point is, my ears It's strangely small.
Right.
Got very strangely small.
Your diddy, dinky little ears.
Ears, yeah. So I think I'd struggle with that. I mean, it is one size fits all, isn't
it? Yeah, but it's that shiny material, that shiny plastic is what they're actually made out of inside as well.
Yeah.
So they do slip out. Well, you know, they if you've got apple-shaped ears, and I literally have been into the Apple shop listening to them trying to sell them to people.
Really?
And they've been trying them on. And Apple will never admit that it's a problem with their product. But they obviously can't tell their potential customers it's a problem with their ears.
So I love that.
They end up, the salespeople end up with them treading this really fine line, you know, where they don't want to blame the customer, but they're not going to say it's a problem with an Apple product.
Yeah.
It's really awkward.
Is it L'Oreal? It's just like, maybe she's born with it.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe just your ears aren't right. Like,
they use like really weird network words, like, your ears are unique. Unique shaped ears.
Oh my God, no one really wants to hear that.
I never want to hear the fact that I've got unique shaped ears. Unique shaped anything. Really, to be fair. Like, I've been told my head is quite unique.
It's quite, have you?
Yeah. Quite large.
Oh.
But not in a good way.
I don't think it's large.
Not like, you're really clever. You've got a big head. Like a kind of, oh my God, you've got such a big head.
Really?
My wife tells me.
I don't think you have a large head.
Really?
Yeah.
I need to work my wife then, because she tells me all the time.
I mean, this is on air, so just play her this.
I will, yeah. I walk into the room and she's like, your head comes in a good few minutes before the rest of your body.
Oh my God, that's a great visual.
It's awful, isn't it?
I don't think that's true.
Well,
I'm not going against your wife, to be fair.
She's probably right, to be fair, though. But I think it's, they fit me, they're all right, okay. I think if they fit you, it's fine. But they're such a good product. They're such a fantastic product. They are one of the best devices that Apple have released, I would say, in the last 10 years, probably 5-10 years.
Yeah.
Because they're just such a great piece of design. It's that perfect combination that Apple do of design and technology together.
I know, I love it.
They just work. They've got great sound, like impossibly good sound quality to them. The battery life is just the right side of good as well. Charging in the case, it's brilliant. And so these new AirPods that they've come out with, this updated generation, so they've got a new chip called the H1 chip, and that enables Hey Siri. So at the moment you can tap on it on the original version that I've got here, double tap, and it will wake up Siri and you can talk to it like that.
Love
it. These ones will just have the Hey Siri that every Apple device is getting now as well.
Yeah.
So they'll have those. So that'll mean lots more people talking to themselves, just barking out loud, Hey Siri, while they're walking down the street.
Love that.
Amazing. It'll switch between devices quicker as well, twice as fast, which is a thing. You know, there's a thing, right? Everyone likes twice as fast.
Wow, yeah.
Extra talk time, hour extra talk time. Now, they're very specific when they say talk time. So it's 3 hours talk time. They don't mention how long the music listening time is. Because I don't tend to take many calls on them, but I listen to a lot of music online.
Well, yeah, I'd imagine that's what they use for most.
And they've got dinky little batteries in them. Like, the batteries are, I'm pointing at the AirPod little stem thing. The batteries are in the stem. They're dinky, tiny little batteries.
Amazing.
3 hours battery life like that is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And then you pop back in the case and they charge again.
Yeah.
And another big news is that they're coming with a new wireless charging case as well, which you can buy, first generation AirPod owners can buy the charging case for $70.
And really?
A wireless charge, yeah. So I could replace this case with a wireless charging case for $70. Now, I'm all about the wireless charging, actually. I do like that.
I was going to say, I'm actually kind of surprised that it's not more expensive.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's quite reasonable for Apple.
It's like 55, 60 quid, maybe, when it comes to the UK.
I reckon they could have bumped that. I'm surprised they didn't, because, you know, they do, don't they?
Why not?
Things are just extortionate.
So there'll be $200, the new generation AirPods, with the wireless charging case.
I think that's reasonable.
For the device that they are, they were 179 quid in the UK originally. And that actually, a lot of people that are in the audio space were like, how can Apple make them for that price? For an Apple product, they were really competitively priced in that market. And that's why they did so well and so popular, because they were sold out for months and months and months when they came out originally. And actually, we're seeing that now. So although they've gone up for pre-order, the shipping date for these new AirPods has already dropped back to April, it looks like, at the moment. As we're recording this, it'll really drop back because the demand. So interesting new product from Apple. How do you improve on, you know, what a lot of people consider to be perfection? And that's how they've done it.
Yeah.
They have. So yeah, fair play to them. I love it. I'm probably going to get some, to be fair, though.
I absolutely know you will.
Again, tap into that secret little budget that no one knows I've got.
Yeah, you'll get them straight away.
Tap, tap.
Well, let us know about the slippery factor.
Yeah, we'll do.
That's the bit I'm most curious about.
There it is, the Barry White.
There he is.
As with every Apple product that Apple says perfect, there ends up being a load of aftermarket accessories that you can buy to fix Apple's perfection. And one of the things is you can buy a skin for them.
Oh, can you?
Like a case for your phone. You can buy a little skin for the AirPods that makes them less slippery. It's like a rubber neoprene thing.
Oh, so basically they've just done it on purpose, haven't they? They've made them slippery so that they can create non-slippery coats. Apple will forever blow my mind.
They are amazing, aren't they? Just a machine.
They're like, oh, you find this slippery? Then buy your earpods a coat.
Oh, you think your battery life isn't very good? Buy this massive, weird battery pack thing that you're going to stick your phone into as a case.
Yeah, and then, you know, you feel chuffed that they've given you that option.
Thank you, Apple.
Yeah, like,
you've
Apple.
Deemed me worthy enough to spend more money.
Thank God you're here.
Oh, love them to bits.
Anyway, can we talk Nike?
Let's talk Nike.
I mean, this is obviously a bit of me, coming from a fashion background.
Yeah.
So their original self-lacing Nikes, they, apparently, the Back to the Future films, they got in touch with Nike, and Tinker Hatfield, which is the vice president of like creative concepts at Nike, he was given the challenge to create Back to the Future shoes. So his idea was the whole self-lacing thing. I don't know if you remember what they looked like. They were basically like sort of vintage Nike high tops.
So just a bit of history on this one. I'm old enough for Back to the Future 2 to be one of my seminal films growing up. Right? Like Ghostbusters, Back to the Future 2, Terminator 2 are pretty much my top three films of all time.
Love that.
And I remember as a kid going, oh, one day the world will be this cool.
Yeah,
it is.
Now it is.
So who's this guy? So he's the head of
Tinker Hatfield. So yeah, he's the vice president of like creative concepts at Nike. Yeah. So like, who doesn't want that job? He's such a boss. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just so cool, and I just love his brain. You know, when you hear someone talk and you're like, I just love your brain.
Mm.
Yeah, he's super cool. So anyway, that was the sort of the original starting point, really. And then he went to develop the Nike Mags in October 2016,
mm-hmm.
which were the originals, and then there was the HyperAdapt 1.0, which was really soon after that. Literally, like, I think it was like a month after that they released this new version.
Right.
So then now the Nike Adapt BBs, which are kind of marketed to be basketball shoes,
mm-hmm.
They are a combination of both previous. So yeah, just what you were just saying then about the battery in the Nike AirPods, you know, the battery is just so nifty. I sound about 60. But, you know, it's in the arch of the shoe, and the way they've done it is so innovative and user friendly and not clunky. You know, Nike are just awesome, aren't they? I think they are. So
they've always had a history of doing some amazing bits of tech in their products. You know, even back in the day where they were doing the sensors for the shoes that could tap it. You know, I think it might have been even back with the iPhone 4. So a fairly long time ago, you get a sensor, pop it in your shoe. It would talk to your phone and it would give you running metrics. You know, and they were one of the first companies to do that at that kind of level, at mass market level, give it kind of biometric data about your sporting activities. Absolutely brilliant. And I've always bought the Nike Plus version of the Apple Watch as well.
Oh, right.
Because I like the straps. They're quite nice straps.
Ah, nice.
But because the Nike Plus app is actually stonkingly good.
Is it? I've never used it.
I'm not a runner. I think if you're a runner, you probably have a whole thing that you do already, right, in terms of apps. But the Nike Plus running app, to get someone into running, is really, really good. Like, dynamic lessons it gives you based on, like, how far you've run. It will measure how quickly you can repair yourself after a run as well, because that's a good measure of fitness.
Yeah.
So they've always had a great kind of understanding of how tech can help athletes and help sport people trying to get into sport, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great example of that as well, right?
Yeah, and talking about apps, I really like some of the features they've got on the apps for these shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, firstly, I really like the fact that it will always reserve just enough battery to unlace, which is obviously super important. Because can you imagine your battery literally running out and then being like, I'm stuck.
It's like, happened again.
Cut your adapt BBs off.
Oh, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that, actually.
Yeah, so that's really cool. But also the app, it's got some really cool settings. So, like, obviously, if you're warming up, you would want your shoes, I assume, slightly looser than when you're actually in the game.
Oh, yeah.
So it provides different, you can set different settings, basically. So you can be like, this is my warm-up setting, and then you press your button to go tighter and set it as this is my game setting. So just before you play, you literally just set it, which now, is awesome.
You know, I've got my slightly cynical cap on here, and I've gone, look, they've just tried to do a movie tie-in, right, because everyone wants to lace up shoes from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what the first versions were. But what you're saying there actually sounds really useful. Like, it's genuinely taking the tech and making it, you know, a better shoe.
I know, I think it is. I think it's awesome. And, you know, I mean, I can't think of an example, but, you know, maybe people who struggle with, I don't know, like arthritis or maybe actually getting down to lace your shoes. Yeah. Like, there's all sorts of possibilities there for, like, the more vulnerable sides of society. Yeah. Like, I just feel like they could go quite far with that concept.
It's a great bit of tech. I love the idea that it will automatically adjust its tension based on how, you know, much exercise or what exercise you're doing as well. That's really clever.
It's super clever. Like, I don't know how it works exactly, whether you've got to kind of go on to your, like, I guess you've got to go onto your app and just click like warm up setting and maybe it'll do it, or the, you know, the buttons under the arch, or maybe like if you click the button twice it'll set to warm up, or I don't exactly know how it works. I'd love to try them, but yeah, basically I know that you can have key settings to how tight you want things,
and then once you've got that capability, there's nothing to say they can't tie it into smartwatches as well, right?
Oh,
which is monitoring your activity, and then once it knows that you've been working out for so long, it starts to adjust the tension there as well.
Yeah, totally. And actually the tech, I mean, it's obviously more complex than I'll make it out to be because I don't understand it really, but it's sort of just this little battery that, like I said, that sits under the arch, and then it's got sort of a little cog, and the lace, you know, the lace is obviously attached to around the shoe like a normal lace would be.
Yeah.
But it just sort of the demo video, it just looks like it's just this little cog turning, right. And it just tightens the lace, and then it just goes back and untightens. Like, it seems like quite a simple concept.
Yeah.
But it's just so clever, isn't it?
I love it. I love it. And I love that. I love what that technology can do, that, though. A really simple little solution to something that actually solves a real need, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. So they're going for $350. What we actually want to talk about, though, is the use of voice in their PR campaign, because that was awesome.
Yeah, they did some really interesting stuff. So sneakers are a big thing, right? I'm not into this world. A part of me wishes I was, because I like to get obsessed about these kind of things, but like, new sneaker drops are a big deal, right?
Massive.
Like, you must know this from your history and stuff like
that. Absolutely.
People will stay up all night, they'll stay waiting in lines, and Nike did a thing last year with Apple as part of a new bit of AR tech that Apple were bringing to the market, where they were releasing products through this AR experience that they'd created.
Mm-hmm.
You unwrapped a box, basically, and there were some shoes inside, and people, you know, were given free products or discounts off those products, and they would, you know, it's the kind of thing where you would buy an iPhone. If you wanted those shoes, you would buy an iPhone, so you got access to the software to go and get these before anyone else, like days before anyone else. And I love how obsessive people can get about shoes. That's fantastic. So,
it totally is. I mean, the way you feel when, I don't know, like an Apple product gets released, people have that about like Jordans, like, you know, like it is a massive, massive thing, especially in the US.
Right, okay, yeah. I mean, I know people who have got them delivered to like workplaces I've been to in the past, and got their little box. They're so excited. It's like Christmas time.
Oh, totally.
The shoe box has arrived. And then they treat them very, very carefully. You know, you've got to keep them box fresh.
Yeah.
So this is an super interesting little piece of work from an agency called Rain in the US. And they're a voice design agency, a bit like Studio Flow. But they've done some amazing stuff here. So what they've worked on is this first of a kind voice activated sneaker drop for the BBs. During the NBA broadcast, it's the LA Lakers versus the Boston Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
Big game on February the 7th. During halftime, while there were 2.5 or just over 2 million viewers watching, they ran an ad that told people to go and ask Nike via their Google Assistant about these new shoes, about this new mic drop. And unbeknownst to the public, Nike were actually giving people a chance to get a free pair, win a free pair of these sneakers if they use the Google Assistant and did it in a special way.
Yeah.
It's fantastic, right? Because obviously these new sneaker drops, they're big news, they're huge business, and some of the first editions go for a lot of money. And Nike, like I say, have always had a good form in using tech to promote their new products. So Rain have said on this one, and it's a lovely story that they've put together on how they created the Google Assistant product, and they wanted to tell the shoe's story from the athlete's perspective, providing an engaging multimedia brand experience, building buzz from a seminal drop moment and the general release of the shoes. So they're showing there really how a voice experience can form part of a wider marketing strategy, can create the kind of buzz that you might be challenged to find elsewhere as well, because the tech is interesting and novel in its own right, but the kind of experiences that you can deliver via the tech is really unique. You know, people were able to buy the shoes as well, so if they didn't get the free pair, they were directed off to a purchase flow using the sneakers app. They were given notifications of new updates, so their, you know, Nike's content strategy for that product release was matched with updates, you know, over the weeks to keep people excited about the drop when it actually finally came. And of course they were able to scale their voice experience to meet that peak demand, that 2 million people during halftime asking for the Google Assistant about the particular shoes. So I think a lot of people tend to consider voice apps and voice marketing voice apps to be fairly lightweight ways of engaging users, but I think this is a real clear example from Rain here in the US of a proper heavyweight marketing piece of activation, you know, using this new technology that is really meaningful for people. It's sort of kind of changing the way that people can interact with brands, really, in this kind of way.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so interesting, and I just see voices just becoming a more and more integral marketing tool. There's just endless possibilities, and yeah, I mean, we're seeing massive shifts that way anyway, aren't we? But yeah, Rain have really made a good splash there.
Yeah, it's a really great example, and I love what they do with Google Assistant as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, good for them. Great job.
Super cool. I love that. I love that new story.
Okay, should we move on to something else?
Yeah, let's go. I mean, this, should we talk Facebook?
Let's talk Facebook.
I mean, this is more heavyweight. We don't usually sort of talk, and I guess quite political as well. I mean, yeah. We don't usually talk this heavyweight, but yeah, take it away, Craig.
I think this is an important story for us to talk about, and I think it's an important story for anyone in the tech world, really, to at least be aware of and think about where their position is on this one. So this was a fantastic piece of tech journalism from The Verge last week. And it's basically the story of how Facebook have contracted out the content moderation for their platforms to a company called Cognizant in the US and around the world. So there's 1,000 people working for Cognizant in their site in Phoenix, Arizona. And they form part of a group of 15,000 content reviewers around the world. And this story was following a couple of their employees and what their life was like. So we'll state the facts, and then we can discuss what that means afterwards. But I think it's a really important story for us as a community to be aware of and talking about. So every employee has to sign a very, very strict NDA. So they're not allowed, obviously, to talk about what they've seen during the day, and they're not allowed to share information about what they've seen to anyone outside of the business. So their job is basically to use this tool that Facebook call the SRT, single review tool. And what will happen is you'll arrive at work in the morning, and you'll log into your single review tool, and then you'll get a steady stream of content that other Facebook users or Instagram users or whatever in the Facebook network have been reported as, or have been reported to Facebook. So this could be reported for all kinds of reasons. It could be it's got abusive content. It could be that it's got content that's illegal. It shouldn't be, you know, that violates Facebook's terms.
Yeah.
But it could also be content that is from someone you don't like. You know, like you've got a friend on Facebook you've fallen out with, you report their content. Right, that would come into this stream as well. So from one piece of content to the next, they're never sure what they're going to see. So they basically sit there in front of their machine, they hit the button, they see something, and then they have to make a decision as to whether it contravenes Facebook's terms of use guidelines, which they have to know inside out. Now, that's a hard job, right? You the kind of stuff you're going to be seeing there is the worst that the internet can throw at you. And that's certainly something I don't think I could do.
It gives me goosebumps. I mean, I always think, you know, like the 999 calls, the people who receive them, like, I just feel like that must be so hard. And like, this is sort of that times 100, because you're seeing the most sort of violent and brutal content that anyone in the world can post. Like, you're literally at the front line of some of the most scarring content that has ever been published.
Yeah.
So, you know, these people, I like, oh, it's just, it does give me goosebumps.
And you would think that, you know, if you're in a job that's potentially that impactful, you know, on your kind of emotional state, you'd think that there would be, a responsible care plan in place for looking after these people. But really, the crux of this story that The Verge have put together is that these people are paid less than $30,000 a year, which is a complete order of magnitude from what an actual Facebook employee would be paid, which is, you know, a normal Facebook employee is on average paid over $200,000.
Can I just say, firstly, I can't believe that.
I know, it's a lot of money, isn't it?
That is such a lot of money. Like, when I read that, I was like, whoa.
But that's San Fran tech wages. I mean, it's fairly, I think for the people that are in that level of job, I think that's, but for there to be such a difference between what a normal Facebook employee is being paid and what these people are doing on a daily basis, you know, it's not like this is a small part of their job. This is their entire job to be doing this. So the story talks about interviews with the employees where they describe the workplace as perpetually teetering on the brink of chaos. It's an environment where their workers cope by telling dark jokes to each other, and where their review decisions are constantly being monitored themselves as well.
Yeah.
So they have to, there's a random sample that's taken from, you know, of your decisions during the day. So they won't review all of them, but some of your decisions will be randomly sampled by your line manager. And if you get them wrong, if you either mark up something as a false positive or you miss something, then, you know, you're at risk of being fired for a few of your errors, right?
Yeah.
So there's a huge amount of pressure that you must be under. And I think, so this story is important that we talk about this story, because there's the story about Facebook and how it's treating these people. But I think there's a wider story about content moderation and where the responsibility for that lies, that I think we as an industry also need to be talking about much more actively than we are now. You know, this isn't privacy. This isn't a discussion about anything like that. This is a discussion about how we moderate content on a service like Facebook that everyone has access to. It's almost a public service now. You know, should that responsibility for the moderation of this content sit with governments rather than sitting with private organisations, you know?
Yeah, that's, I think, you make a really good point there.
Especially in the wake of our of the stories last week, and obviously the tragic events that happened in New Zealand, which is just heartbreakingly awful, and that content being streamed on Facebook's platform as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, where does the responsibility for that lie? You know, there was one point where Facebook were taking down hundreds of thousands of reposts of that video on a daily basis, you know.
Yeah.
So YouTube were doing an active job on actually removing that stuff, but it's like trying to squash a balloon. There'd always be areas where it pops up.
That's it. It's an absolute rabbit hole.
So yeah, I think it's definitely go and check out The Verge story. It's a fantastic piece of tech journalism, really, really worth your time. There's a great podcast they released as part of the Verge podcast, actually. It's called The Secret Lives of The Secret Lives of Facebook's Moderators, by Casey Newton. That's their journalist over at The Verge. It's a great, great piece of tech journalism, and it's a story that wasn't picked up by any of the other mainstream press as well. So yeah, definitely worth checking that out, and get involved in the discussions on this, because I think it's down to all of us to really shape the future of where an important service like content moderation should live.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what surprised me is, obviously I work within AI, and I'm just really surprised that humans are doing that job. Like, for example, there was one example, you know, Facebook were very open to having people in, to review, like reporters in. So, you know, there was a lot of actual documentation of real life situations, and there was one man called Miguel, I believe, and he said that For example, he gave this example: if someone was to write on Facebook, autistic people should be sterilized, that would not be taken down because autism is not a protected characteristic in terms of Facebook's privacy policy.
Yeah.
In the way that, like, race or gender would be. Mm-hmm. However, if someone was to put men should be sterilized or women should be sterilized, that would be taken down because that violates their privacy laws. So it just got me thinking, like, something that's that black and white, you know? Like, that's the privacy policies that they've put in. Surely an AI sort of, or like an algorithm could sort of do that job for them. Like, why are there people having to see these brutal things or read these awful things? Surely that's where automation would be best placed.
Yeah, you would think, wouldn't you? And I would have thought Facebook have got a level of that already that they're doing to moderate a level of their content. But I think with all these systems, there are going to be false positives. It's not going to catch everything.
Yeah.
So they have to have that human element in place. The other side of this as well, which they cover in detail in the Verge story itself, is that Facebook have a whole series of categories that they deem to be inappropriate, and they're hierarchical, they're ranked as well. So nudity ranks higher on their offensive scale than something like racism.
Really?
For example, yeah. I don't know the exact details on those ones, but the article does cover this in much more detail, so definitely go and check it out. But yeah, Facebook have made a call on what is more offensive than something else. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want Facebook, a commercial organisation, a capitalist commercial organisation with their shareholders' interests at heart, not society's, I don't want them to be making the kind of calls on what's more offensive than others.
Absolutely.
Other things, you know? And this, for me, this is where the debate needs to be wider and we all need to get involved with it. But yeah, stories like the one you've just mentioned there are absolutely, like, yeah, it seems an obvious thing that AI could step in and take over, right?
Yeah.
It would help. You'd hope that that's what Facebook are working on. They're working on ways of moderating this autonomously.
Yeah, I hope so, because it's kind of the flip side to the argument, isn't it? I mean, you know, we constantly see press around how automation are taking people's jobs, and I mean, this is exactly the kind of place where automation should be taking people's jobs, because people should not be exposed to this kind of content.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, super interesting story.
Yeah, I'd love to open up a bit more of a talk about this. I've actually been thinking recently that it might be quite nice to create a podcast Facebook group where obviously the things that we do discuss, it can be a continued conversation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we do really care what our listeners have to say. And obviously we always encourage you to use hashtag the podcast. But sometimes, you know, a tweet isn't enough or a post isn't enough. You want to have a conversation. So, yeah, that's something that I'm looking into. But for the time being, obviously use hashtag the podcast or email us on info@webuildbots.ai and we can continue the conversation there.
Also, if you're working in one of these industries and you have unique insight as well that you'd like to share with us, either anonymously or, you know, or on the record, then we'd love to interview you as well for these series, because I think having wider voices, experts in the field, would be super useful to add to the wider consensus of what we think is acceptable.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that would be incredible.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Get in touch.
Get in touch.
So, should we switch it to a different gear?
Should we lighten up?
Oh, our favourite topic at the minute.
Yeah.
So, this is Tesla revealing their Model Y. Now, are you all Tesla'd out after last month's episode?
No, I'm Tesla'd in.
Yeah!
Like, I love it!
It is so cool, isn't it?
It is so cool. Like, as you know, I'm not a car person, I don't even own one, but I do love Tesla.
Yeah.
I've started reading that Elon Musk autobiography or book or whatever.
Yeah,
because I'm just fascinated by him and, yeah, just... Yeah, no. So in answer to that, no, I am not Tesla'd out.
Tesla'd in. I love that. So yeah, this is the story of Tesla releasing their new Model Y, a compact SUV. Now, did you see the video of them doing this, of Musk on stage
during
his reveal, right? Did you not think it was a little weird? He sort of spent the first large part of that, of like more than half of it, talking about Tesla's history, which is impressive, right? It is super impressive what they've done so far, and you're like, okay, wow. But then he seemed to spend more time, or at least the same amount of time, talking about the solar roof tech that they've got, as they did about the new Model Y. Mm. It was really interesting. And actually, I think because he realises that it's inevitable, the Model Y, when Elon Musk talks about it, has always formed part of his strategy for the way that his electric cars are going to revolutionise the world, right? So the short story is, the Tesla Roadster, the first car they did, super expensive, and then they could progressively produce cheaper and cheaper cars, but to the point where they can use that money to reinvest in building the infrastructure they need and the factory facilities, and then their ultimate goal was to release the Model 3 at an affordable price point. Yeah. Now, that was the plan. The affordable price point ended up being $35,000, mm-hmm. which I think for a lot of people is not an affordable price point. So Musk has now gone on to say that there will be an even cheaper car, potentially, than the Model 3. But to fill the gap, in the meantime, the Model Y, as a compact SUV, sits in between the Model S and a compact luxury sedan, as he calls it, and the Model 3, which is their kind of budget entry-level model. Now, a compact, I didn't know this, but the compact SUV market is about 50% of the US market. That kind of makes sense, I suppose. You know,
they love an SUV.
Big country.
I know, that's a mass generalisation.
They love an SUV.
Well, they do.
Like really big cars.
Yeah. Like that's all I really saw.
Six lane, you know, LA freeways, massive SUVs. Yeah. So yeah, I think for Musk and for a lot of the pundits watching the industry, a compact SUV was an inevitability. So maybe that's why he didn't make such a big song and dance out of it.
Yeah.
But it's a great car, right? Like, it's still worth talking about. It's basically a Model 3 on steroids. So it's a Model 3 scaled up a bit. So it's got the same front end. It's got a lot of the same drivetrain and battery tech, probably most all the same of it. I think he was saying like 75% of the Y is Model 3 underneath.
Yeah, I was listening to something the other day. Don't quote me on this. But they were saying something like it's the love child of Model 3 and Model X. Because I think it's got, they were like, it's got its mother's eyes and its father's thumb. Because, yeah, like, frontwards, it's Model 3. Yeah. And then at the back, I think it is more like Model X, I believe. I don't know.
It's a bit weird, though, right? Because, like, obviously Tesla's done some amazing things in design, in, you know, their car design over the years, right? Yeah. They've done some incredible things. And they've got a pickup SUV or pickup car that they're going to be producing soon as well, which Musk has described as a bit more crazy than anything they've done before.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah, right? Like, the teaser shots were super cool. But the Model Y's design is very, very close to the 3. You'd think they would go just push it a little bit further, or at least a little differentiate a little bit, because this thing is still, you know, the long-range version of it is still nearly $50,000.
I know. The way they've described it as well is a bit of a funny one. They kind of, they've just sort of marketed it as like they're filling out the lineup of the cheaper range. Mm. You know, it's not like this car is really special, it's really unique. They're just like, we're just filling out the lineup.
You know that Musk isn't particularly excited about this one, right?
Yeah, well, exactly.
He sort of wakes up and does this for his breakfast.
Oh yeah, he's got his cornflakes there and he's just sketching stuff.
He's like, why? There you are.
Yeah,
done.
Why,
like,
not?
Why not? That is great. That is the headline for this story. Why not? So some of the stats on it, it'll do 300 miles range. It's going to do 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. The performance model is. Now, that is kind of insane, right? For a car that size, for a car that heavy, it can pull that hard.
I thought it was 0 to 60 in 5.9.
So I think there are a couple of different versions that are going to do different speeds. Oh, let's take your stats on that one.
I mean, I don't know.
The 3.5 was the Model 3, actually. Maybe I'm misreading this, but that's the performance version. But even 5.9, though, right? Like, that's insane.
Oh, yeah. 0 to 65.9, and I think the range is something around 230, I believe, 230 miles.
Yeah, so they tend to do this to kind of give their price points at different levels.
Yeah.
So they have like a normal range version, so they can say they're selling a car for, you know, 47,000 or 35,000.
Yeah.
But then the one that people will probably end up buying is the longer range one, the performance version. It's going to be a lot more money. And
absolutely.
That one will do 300. So, yeah, it's an interesting strategy.
So, should we have a little look at why it is different, the ways that it is different?
Yeah.
So, apparently it visually looks wider, but there's no, I don't know if there is much confirmation on if it is actually long, wider, or whether it's got flared like fenders on it, mm-hmm. so it gives the visualization that it's wider. Mm. The rear doors are different. Apparently, they're larger at the belt line, making it easier to entry and exit the back. It's obviously got three rows.
Yes, seven-seater, right?
Yeah.
It's a compact SUV, seven-seater.
Yeah, and the front seats, apparently, when you're sat in the front of the Y, it is absolute mirror image of Model 3, but the seats are just slightly higher. They're on raisers. Like, on risers, rather. They're not on raisers. That would be,
that'd be a little harsh.
It's a bit dark. It was about that. They're on risers. And it comes with the fully autonomous tech.
The autonomous tech is interesting. Mm. So there's a little angle on this one that's quite interesting to dig into. So Musk, in an investor call in January, described all of Tesla vehicles as being capable of what he called self-driving capabilities.
Yeah.
Full self-driving capabilities. I think a lot of people have come out and gone, no, hold on a minute, that's not full self-driving, because there's a definition for what self-driving is. There are levels of autonomy that the industry has kind of agreed upon, and this is not what the industry agrees as being self-driving autonomy level.
Yeah.
So what he's talking about when he talked about self-driving is this ability for it to enter and exit, so on-ramp and off-ramp on highways, for it to drive on its own onto those highways and come off those highways, navigate interchanges, take exits on its own, accelerate around other traffic. So it's very autonomous, but it's not fully autonomous. It's not the kind of thing where you could just jump in, press a button, have a coffee, have a little snooze in the back. So I think he needs to be a little bit careful on what he sells, to the point where they actually took off the label of self-driving as an option from their website back last October, because they were worried that it was causing too much confusion. But this was an investor call he did relatively recently. I think he needs to be a little bit careful about how he describes this stuff. But, I think we're a little bit fanboyish here on the whole Tesla thing.
Elon just does what he wants, doesn't he?
So, and I love
support
it.
Him 100%.
100%. I am totally there as well.
Love you, Elon.
Love you, Elon. But because they have such an impressive record of what they've been doing in the past with improvements, over-the-air improvements, right? They are completely revolutionising how people are going to see vehicles in the future. The best story of this is that they've increased the peak power of the Model 3 by 5% just with a software upgrade.
Really?
Since it was released, right? They're going to improve the range of the long-range battery pack and the rear-wheel drive motor, and they've made it output 5% more power just with software updates over the air. So you'll drive home, and in the morning you'll wake up and your car is a better car. Without you doing anything.
That's amazing.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Really, really cool.
It is.
So look, fair play to them, right? They're going to have these little bumps in the road as they go along. They were only a couple of
love
weeks
that
away.
Analogy.
Thank
I'm
you.
Like, that wasn't lost on me.
I love it. Love it. I try hard on these ones. They've gathered as they go along, but they are doing some super, super interesting things, and they're definitely one to watch out for.
Oh, yeah, they're just awesome.
Best point of this whole story is that Tesla, because Elon Musk is a boy at heart, right? He's a 12-year-old boy stuck in a billionaire's body, right? And he finds these kind of things funny, and actually I kind of do too. He finished the presentation by saying that Tesla finally gets sexy, right? And this, oh God, I couldn't even bring myself to say it. It's S3XY.
I know.
And that's why the Y completes the lineup.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I did see that.
It's childish, isn't it?
It's childish, but I mean, I'm with you. I just love that. I mean, who's used the number 3 as in like as an E since like the 1990s?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
no one. And Elon's just brought sexy back.
He's brought sexy back, yeah.
And I love him for that.
From the dude who straps mannequins into space rockets.
I know.
And fires cars into space. He actually said on stage, one final thing actually that I picked up. So people were heckling him in the video, the Y release video. They were like, oh, Elon, you should do this, you should do this. And he committed to some fairly significant things. He committed his entire company to some fairly significant things. One of them was they would have a Tesla would land on Mars. That was one of the things someone said, you should put it on Mars. And he was like, yeah, all right, we'll put a Tesla on Mars.
It's like, all right, why not?
Now, that means you can guarantee there are hundreds of employees from both Tesla and SpaceX in a room smacking their heads against walls going, oh, for God's sake.
Guaranteed, guaranteed. They would have been uproar. I wish they'd been like a live stream from his HQ.
Yeah, just people slapping themselves.
Yeah.
Going, oh, again.
Oh,
love him.
Brilliant.
Love him to bits.
Oh, anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode, guys. It's been great catching up with you, Craig.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much.
So until next time, have a great week.
Bye-bye.